Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Jim Wyatt from TennesseeTitans.com. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How you guys doing today?
Doing great, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Jim, let's start on the Shedeur Sanders front. You were there the other day as he spoke and met with the Titans. What were your kind of first impressions of Shedeur Sanders, who obviously we'll be talking a lot about over the next 3 months?
Yeah, I had a great first impression with him. I have to say, I know coaches and the GM and everybody else with the team did as well. Like, they had separate times with him. Yeah, I know there was a throw-in session last Friday that a lot of the Titans personnel were there. Shedeur Sanders was there. He wasn't throwing. All the other guys were, but he just was there kind of to make himself available. And Brian Callahan saddled up to him that day and talked to him for maybe 15 minutes, first time he'd met him. Really good impression. And then Shedeur came to the headquarters where a lot of teams were meeting, the next day, and the Titans were close again for 15 minutes. You know, the Bears, a couple other teams that didn't really need a quarterback, gave up their time to the Titans so they could have extended time with them. So they'd met them for another maybe 30, 45 minutes in that room. And then he did his media availability the next day. He's the biggest star down here. There's no question about it. There's nobody even close. And I stay down here. I've moved on. I'm in Mobile now. I'm talking like I'm still in Dallas. But he was the biggest star at the Shrine Bowl. There's no doubt about it. So everybody wanted to talk to him. He did his media availability. And I think everybody figured that would be it. I was hoping to get extra time with him. I wasn't holding my breath doing that. We had a couple other people, from the team down here. Todd Gray, one of our video guys, Max Walsh, another guy that helps out in video, Donald Page, our photographer. Everybody's just trying to gather as much stuff, for the draft. I don't know who the team's picking at this point. The team doesn't know who it's picking at this point. But in the event it's Shedeur Sanders, we're trying to get as much content as possible. So I asked Shedeur's brother, Deion's son, hey, any chance the Titans could get him for an extra 5-10 minutes? And Shedeur actually heard me asking it at kind of a walkaway session, and he said, find me. He'll find me later, and I'll do it. And then sure enough, we went to him, and he made extra time for us. He shook all of our hands. He couldn't have been any nicer. And I left thinking, man, this is a very nice kid, great personality. A lot of things still to be sorted out as far as the quarterback play, but seeing him and meeting him for the first time, I've left very impressed.
So, Jim, obviously, I don't think anyone would have expected him to probably play in this game. I mean, I'm sure his agent would, that'd be a non-starter. That's what I would assume. I was kind of surprised he was going, but it seems like this is the idea, right? This is the point, to be down there, to have that extra time. I mean, there's other opportunities to talk with teams and all that, but get started on that, and even this aspect too, be out in front of the media, because there is stuff I think about him that's just probably unfair because of his dad. Do you feel like it's almost like this is a little bit of an intentional, I don't know if a campaign is the right word, but a way to get out there and let people know who he really is?
Oh, I definitely do. Yeah, and I didn't expect him to do anything. I think he's already left there. Like, I know Deion was there yesterday, but I think Shedeur's moved on. Shiloh, his brother's there, taking part. But I think the only reason he went was to make himself available to teams and just to kind of let people see him for who he is. Yeah, I'm like everybody else. I saw him from afar. I know who his dad is. I know. He comes with a lot of extra attention. He had a film crew there himself, kind of filming his every move. They were, and again, it was Deion's son, Deion Jr., who was doing it. And he wasn't filming just Shedeur; he was filming all the Colorado guys down there. But he comes with a little extra, especially because of who his dad is. I think Shedeur probably told the teams the same thing he told us, is, hey, is it really a bad thing to have a dad who's interested in you and cares about what you're doing and wants you to do it the right way? You know, while he did his interview with the Titans, there were a couple of times where Deion actually FaceTimed him during that meeting, and Titan said, hey, pick it up. And they had a little fun with it. You know, I think he wanted them to know that, hey, yeah, he's maybe gotten a lot of attention. Yes, people have some questions about his father and his involvement, but his father's going to be coaching Colorado, or he's going to be coaching somewhere else. He's not going to be here babysitting him, or where, whatever team he ends up going to. He's not going to be there babysitting. Yeah, he's going to have an influence, but I don't think that's all bad. If your dad's a Hall of Famer, you know, certainly I don't have an issue with him being involved in his son's life.
So, Jim, as you've talked with people and as you've kind of looked at this process, that again is in the beginning stages here as we get ready for the draft here in a few months, what are kind of your initial impressions on Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward as it relates to the type of prospects that they are heading into the draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're different prospects. And it's funny, they're buddies. You know, they train together and have a little fun bantering back and forth about who the better prospect is. And I think you ask different people and they'll tell you different things. I think a lot of people consider Cam Ward to be the better prospect just because maybe of his speed and his run threat and his skill set overall. You know, I was watching, something Mel Kiper had on TV last night with Phil Yates, and I think Phil Yates is of the opinion that Cam Ward is the better prospect, and most people have Cam Ward going first. Mel, I noticed, has Shedeur Sanders as his top-rated QB, and, you know, he's not going to fill you with the speed necessarily. I think he's, maybe the arm strength isn't as good as some other quarterbacks that have come out recently, but I think he's known for kind of throwing on time. I think he's known for making relatively good decisions. Obviously has to speed things up some. He got sacked a lot last year. Some of that's because Colorado's line wasn't that good. Compared to other quarterbacks that have come out in drafts in recent years, I think both these guys, there are some questions about how they measure up, but that's what this process is about, just to see how they fit in your system, what you can do with them. I know one thing Brian Callahan kept saying when I talked to him about Shedeur Sanders is just how tough he is and just how he took so many hits and just kept getting back up. He's not a complainer. He's not a guy that's looking to point fingers at other players, for making mistakes. And again, I think he was raised right from a football mindset. So you're getting a little something extra there because of that.
So Jim, obviously the Titans could go after one of those guys. They could decide to try to trade out of there. I mean, Chad Brinker last week talking about 30 picks in 3 years, 12 in the top 100. I'd try to do the math on that. I'm like, I don't see how that happens if they don't trade out of this spot. But if they were to do that, the other option they could, or the other route they could go, is getting a veteran quarterback. What do you think about that situation, the veteran quarterback possibilities right now in free agency, and I guess possibly trade as well?
Well, there's some options out there, and I have to be careful sometimes. I've been reminded in the past about talking about players that are on other teams. It's one thing I was working the paper doing it. I think now working for the team, I've learned – maybe John Robinson's the one that reminded me of it at one point.
You can tamper. No one's listening.
better not mention specific players if they're still under contract. But I am aware that there are some guys out there who are going to be available in free agency. I also know that there are some guys that you think might be available, and then March rolls around, and they're not. They're either tagged or they're re-signed. There's some guys I think that potentially could be of interest via trade. I think that's something you have to explore. But again, you also got to keep in mind that some of these guys that you're potentially could be eyeing, the Titans aren't the only ones looking for a quarterback. So they, even if they like somebody and they're available, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to sign them. So a lot of moving parts there. I think what happens in March certainly is going to tell us, give us some clues certainly about what could happen in late April. And I'm curious myself. I know this is early in the process and a lot to be determined at that position, a lot of other positions. I'm with you in knowing the value of getting extra picks. I'm with you in knowing that the quarterback position isn't the only position they need for the Titans. So this is a roster that needs to be rebuilt. And I'm also aware that some quarterbacks are coming up in future drafts that could be long-term options as well. So I think you got to consider all those things.
Jim, you caught up with John Fossil. And I'm just curious from your vantage point there, your impressions of him and just what he's done in this league. Well, you know, what sort of a boost and upgrade do you feel like the Titans are getting on their special team staff with him leading the way?
Well, he's great. I wouldn't expect him to be down there. I should have thought about it more that, you know, I was in Dallas and he lives in Dallas, obviously coaching the Cowboys. So I didn't expect to see him at this throwing session on Friday morning when I was there, but sure enough, there he was. So I loved his energy. You know, I'd heard so many good things about him from afar, you know, after that move kind of leaked out, you know, guys, you know, everybody from Keith Bullock to Coach Mack to I think Roger Saffold, Derek Mason, like a lot of people that had been with him before that I know all raved about him and just talked about his energy. I've seen, you know, video clips of him and just his passion. And just in the 5-10 minutes I talked to him, I could sense that. I mean, he's a very, you know, kind of an emotional, youthful, exuberance type energy that he brings. And I think the Titans were really lucky to get him. I mean, he talked about why he wanted to join the Titans and felt like he wanted a fresh start and likes Brian Callahan and said he'd always been intrigued by Nashville. He's got three girls. He's looking forward to getting them to Nashville and being in the city. But he brings moxie. I mean, he brings a great teacher here. Yeah, Colt Anders is a really nice guy. I liked him. I felt bad for him because you know what? Everyone will see guys not have success. And he had a tough time, and he didn't have a lot of experience, obviously, coming here. Now they've got a guy who has a lot of experience and will demand players get it right. And he's also known for being a guy who's not afraid of a little trickery. And so, you know, some people that I know that cover the Cowboys, we're talking to him a little bit about how Callahan may even have to rein him in a little bit because he's always pitching stuff he wants to do and fakes he wants to try in different situations. So I think it's going to be a whole new game when it comes to special teams for the Titans.
Hopefully it's not like Vrabel trying to get Brett Kern killed on a
Yeah, I hope you don't have any calls like that.
more like the one against the Texans, the Byard throw.
Yeah, maybe quarterback, maybe the punter throwing it instead of running it.
Yeah. Wow, Brett Kerr just got totally massacred out there.
Oh, boy. What was that, Devin White? Was that Devin
White? Yeah, it was
White?
Devin White.
Oh, boy. One-on-one against Devin White. My goodness. Are you noticing a Borgonzi effect here, Jim? What's the vibe, you know, just with the front office changes?
Well, yeah, it's different. I know we've got a couple others that have been leaked out, I guess, that have not officially been announced yet. The new front office and an experienced front office. You know, I can mention it because it's out there. I think it's reported that Dave Ziegler's coming aboard, Reggie McKenzie's coming aboard. Obviously, Mike Borgonzi, who has done it for a long time himself. Yeah, it's a certainly new look front office. And they have flooded certainly these, you know, off-field events like I haven't seen before. Some of that's because of the new GM, and I think some of it's because you got the number one pick. And I think I counted maybe 16 to 20 Titans representatives at the Shrine Bowl. You know, everybody from Mike Borgonzi to Brian Callahan to Chad Brinker to Denard Wilson to Nick Holtz to, you know, a lot, you know, pretty much everybody on the scouting staff. So I think they're going to be a lot more aggressive in just scouting players and how they handle things. And again, if, when you're at these events, you see people that have crossed paths with him before, and all of them have raved about him. So now he'll have to go out and find the right players. There are people that raved about Rand Carthon when he was hired. It was for different reasons, more about his great relationship building, and ultimately what I think got Rand is maybe some of the other parts that didn't get done in acquiring players. But we'll see how this works with Mike Bergonzi, but certainly I think it's a great hire, and I think two big moves this offseason to get Mike Bergonzi and John Fossil. I think those were probably the top guys at their respective jobs, and now they're both in both with the Titans.
Well, Jim, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time as always. Enjoy yourself in Mobile, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, appreciate it. You have a good one.
Absolutely. Jim Wyatt from TennesseeTitans.com, our guest on Robbie and Rexro. We'll react to what Jimmy had to say there. Take more of your thoughts on the Titans. Robbie and Rexro, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie and Rexro, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Thanks to Jim Wyatt from TennesseeTitans.com for being with us in the last segment. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Let's head to our 102.5, the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Dylan to the program. Dylan, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning. I'm glad you guys brought the biscuit back. That's a good one. You guys should.
People were very mad when it was gone.
Oh yeah, me too. I was. Excuse me. But Joe is a Bush hater, and the Big Four: Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, Nirvana, Pearl Jam. Right? I get that. But Bush. I'm sorry. Joe hates Bush for whatever reason, and that annoys me. But that's not the reason I'm calling here.
I hate them less than some bands, but carry on.
Oh, yeah, Creed. So, the Chiefs. I'm so done with the Chiefs. I'm so over the Chiefs. And it wasn't as egregious as it was in the Texans game, because that was bad. But somebody – Josh Allen is not going to do it. He's not going to do it. He doesn't – he almost threw two picks in the first drive. This dude is not going to beat the Chiefs. Who is it going to be? Is it going to be C.J. Stroud? Is it going to be Joe Burrow? I mean, like, someone has to beat the Chiefs, and I'm so sick of the damn Chiefs. Like, somebody has to do it. And I don't know, man. I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Dylan. Appreciate it. Well, I mean, everybody's trying. I mean, it's hard to beat that team. And first off, I mean, Joe Burrow has been the one that has done it. He has gone and won in Arrowhead in the playoffs. Brady was the other one, and he's gone, at least for the moment.
Who's the greatest quarterback of all time?
Tom Brady.
Okay. Well, Eli Manning beat him twice in the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Also, like, I don't know that I'm convinced that Josh Allen is never going to beat him in the playoffs either.
I'm not
like,
either. Like, I hear what you're saying, Dylan. He was shaky early. I agree. Early on, I'm like, man, is he too amped up? But, like, eventually he was pretty freaking good. He's pretty freaking good.
If referee could spot a ball correctly, he might have won. Who knows?
Well, there's that. And, you know, Lamar Jackson last year, I mean, they couldn't run the ball. Chiefs totally dominated. They also had Zay Flowers fumbling at the goal line, and it's a totally different game if that doesn't happen. I mean, you know, I think one of these guys could get him. Burrow has gotten him.
Tannehill was up on him at the half, baby. Let's not forget that.
That's right. Tannehill was taking it to him. Burrow beat him. So, you know, it's not impossible.
I guess almost up on him at the half. Were they up at halftime?
They were still up.
No, they were still up.
They were still up, but it was
starting to fade.
I think that cut it to three. Well, you know what? I'm not sure. That may have put them ahead.
They were up for a while.
They were up. I mean, they were up. Yeah, they were up multiple scores. They couldn't be stopped at the beginning. You know, it's the problem is what if the Chiefs do, like, what if Worthy does develop into like a real weapon? You know, what if they keep adding to that? I mean, because they can be better than they are. They're an imperfect team that cannot lose close games, and they're maybe about to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I understand. Everybody has fatigue. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jalen Hurts may beat him. I have no idea.
I mean, if only they had Sam Darnold. Now, if the Eagles had Sam Darnold, then we'd be talking about a Super Bowl, folks.
Duval.
Oh, maybe that's who it is at the end of the day.
The audio is very good, but it's the video with it.
The facial expression along with it is
makes it an absolute keeper.
I would imagine that one's not going anywhere anytime soon.
No.
We'll be seeing that clip of Liam Cohen saying Duval probably long after he's the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars would be my guess.
So you don't think he's going to be good, huh?
Well, I mean, recent history, and by recent I mean over the last 25 years, would suggest that it's going to be a tough go of things for the Jacksonville Jaguars head coach.
Yeah.
There's an exception every now and then.
Doug Marrone had a couple good years
he
in
did.
There. By the way, Mike Vrabel's offensive line
Vrabel's hiring
coach.
All kinds of people.
That's a pretty good hire.
Yeah.
Maybe Vrabel will come on here and tell us about it.
Well, maybe is the last thing we heard.
Yeah. It's not no.
It's better than probably not.
That's it. It is better than probably not, which is another one that will live on forever. Not quite. I mean, I think the best drop we have is probably PK, though, right?
Yes.
Nick, that's your cue. He's not even listening to the show. I was trying to set Nick up to, like,
Duval.
No, not that one.
He definitely wasn't listening. That's okay.
The PK one. Give us the PK one. Come on.
He's left.
I smoke weed constantly.
That's just
would have been better if you hit it the first time.
Yeah,
that's all
I know.
Good.
Right. It kind of lost the effect, but it is still beautiful.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll continue to take more of your thoughts on the Titans. We'll also get back into our UC Soros conversation as well. Is it time to be concerned about UC Soros? And I'll lay those numbers out for you again coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie and Rex Road, sponsored by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe, diving back into our UC Soros discussion. So I laid it out there earlier. The numbers are not trending in a positive direction for UC Soros, really, over the last couple of years. So let's just start with the 2022-23 season. That was two seasons ago. That was John Hines' last year. And that was the year, you know, they sold off Ekholm and Niederreiter and Janot and Granlund and got those picks and prospects at the deadline. And everybody thought that they were just going to be kind of dead and buried in the second half of the year. And they didn't. The young guys came up, they played well, and it was until game 81 that they were still in the playoff mix. And a big part of that, the biggest part of that, was UC Soros. He was great in net for them down the stretch. He finished that season with a 919 save percentage, a 269 goals against, and a goal saved above average of 30. Now, you can find different analytical websites, and everybody measures it a little bit differently. I'm using Hockey Reference for mine, but 30 goals saved above average. Pretty darn good from UC Soros a couple years ago. That's elite goaltending. That's what you're paying him to be. Last year, we know it, he got off to a rough start. That was a big reason why the Predators struggled out of the gate last year, is he was not up to his usual standard in goal. He got better as the season went on. He was pretty good in the second half of the regular season, pretty good into the playoffs. He finishes with a 906 save percentage, 286 goals against average, and a goal saved above average of 5.3 at the end of the year. So a pretty steep drop-off from the year before in terms of the goal saved above average number, but maybe you just explained it of, well, he was so bad in the first half of the season, and then he started to figure it out. Well, this year, he's got, at the moment, an 899 save percentage, a 288 goals against average, and a goal saved above average of minus 2.1, which means he's right around league average to slightly below average in terms of the goals that he's allowing so far this year. It doesn't mean that he is doomed moving forward, but it also, Joe, is not really encouraging. You're talking about a guy that's going to be 30 years old in April. He just signed an 8-year contract extension, which, by the way, has not kicked in yet. It kicks in after this year. And I think you knew when you signed him to the contract that maybe the last 2 or 3 years of that deal probably wouldn't look very good. But you live with that, and you offset that by you expect elite goaltending for the first 4 or 5 years of that. He's not giving elite goaltending right now. How concerned should Predators fans be by that?
Yeah, I think pretty concerned. Like you said, he's not doomed. You told me right now UC Soros is a Vezina finalist next year. Okay. I mean, I could believe it. But like you said, I think last year we had similar discussion, but it was still earlier. You know, it was more the outlier, but like that first half of last year, the GSAE was way down, right? And it was like, what is happening? But that was also, well, it's a new system. Of course, there are other factors. You can't totally cleanly separate everything in goaltending numbers and say it's definitely all the
right.
I mean, you do the best you can with these numbers. I said earlier in the show, the numbers that everybody in the league looked at with Kevin Lankinen were, wow, he's terrible. The Preds signed him anyway, and he was good. Like they, yeah. So teams have better information than this. But also, you can watch UC Soros and you can match up the way he's playing with those numbers. He's not as good right now. Why is that? Have the injuries accumulated, caught up with him? Is he hurt right now? We don't know it. Is he getting too much blame for this stuff? Is it the fact that the way he plays, and we've talked about this for years now, actually, at least I'd say a couple years that this has come up, you know, the way he plays with his size, you have to be twitchy, explosive, and it's a high athleticism requirement to be able to play in this league at that level, yep. Which he's had. So does that desert you earlier than the traditional bigger goaltender who can get into the mid-30s and still play at a high level? I think that's a fair question, and that was one of the reasons that last year I said I just think that they should not spend this money on him and that they should try to go with the young guy and, you know, kind of deal with the you know, that in-between time where you're not maybe not very good there, but in the end have more money and then have the younger player for longer, you know? They didn't choose that way. It's not right now time to say Trotz blew it.
No.
But it's concerning.
It's concerning. You know, how much of it is everything else that's gone wrong with them this year? Like, obviously, you know, they had not just playoff expectations. I mean, there were expectations that this team could potentially be dangerous this year, and they just have not been at any point this year. He's been a part of that. I mean, I talked about none of these stats are perfect, right? Like, you can look through save percentage, and you can poke holes and, like, all right, well, so-and-so has a really good save percentage, but, you know, they're not giving up anything. Like, they've got the puck the whole game. You're going to have a good save percentage more than likely at that point. So there's different ways to look at these numbers. The goal saved above expected thing is not perfect, but I do think it does a pretty good job of kind of illustrating who's playing really well in goal and who's not. And the bottom line is, like, to me, it's beyond just, like, how much of this season is concerning for Soros. It's the fact that the 8-year deal hasn't kicked in yet. Like, the numbers over the last 2 years would suggest that he's in a decline. Now, I don't know for sure that that's like some permanent decline. He is only 29 years old. I mean, he'll be 30 in April. So theoretically, he shouldn't be falling off the table yet. But maybe the usage has caught up. Somebody brought that up earlier. Like, have they used him too much? Have they worn him into the ground with the way that they've played him over the last few years?
And the way he plays,
yeah.
Maybe the way he plays means that you have to rest him a little bit more, especially yeah. Moving forward.
Yeah,
right.
I think that needs to be a given. Like that, I think the days of him, I mean, he's gone through now a 3-year stretch, before this season, a 3-year stretch where he started 67 games. He played 67 games, 64 games, and 64 games. That's a lot of games.
Yeah, it's a big, for a those goalie. Are big numbers.
That's got to change as they move forward here. But you're paying him, or you're about to start paying him to be an elite goalie. And I understand it. Like, the contract, the number that he ended up signing last offseason came in lower than I anticipated. Like, it wasn't like it was $8.5 million a year. It came in under $8 million, which I thought was a really good job by Barry Trotz to nail the number down that way, particularly when you knew what Hellebuck got and what Shesterkin was going to get. Like, yep. I thought they did a good job of lowering that number. But right now, he's not worth that. Like, right now, I mean, that's still, you're paying him to be an upper echelon goalie. And the numbers would tell you right now that he is not. So regardless of how you feel about that, look, I said it earlier. He's had some starts this year where he's looked great. I mean, he's had some, he's had four shutouts.
Like UC Soros.
He's had plenty of games this year where he's looked like UC Soros. But in totality, the numbers are what they are. Like, I am presenting the numbers. This is what they are. This is what they tell us. And I would be very concerned about that if I'm the Predators.
And again, those numbers of GS, the goal saved, you know, against expected. I mean, that's I think that matched up before, you know, like that year when, well, the year when he should have been a Vezina finalist and wasn't, and I get my years mixed up. But I remember that the GSAE number that year was insane, and it was like, that's exactly what we were seeing.
Yeah.
You know, night after night he was doing ridiculous things. And it matches up now, to me, with just too many soft goals that, like, you just can't let in that are getting in. I got to read this from Adam in Portland. He says, I feel the same way about Soros. A lot of people feel about their spouses. They love them, but it doesn't look like they like them very much. And I just don't like him. He's a great dude. He does everything right. He's also short, and I don't think he can win a Stanley Cup for us. Now we're stuck with him until I'm in my mid-40s. What the hell? That's a lot, Adam.
That's a lot.
But I had to read it.
Yeah. I mean, it is so important. You know, we talk about this season on the whole of how much of this is just one season where everything has gone off the rails, and next year they can rebound and they're back in being competitive and in contention. And how much of this is just a misidentification of what they are, and could they be in for more pain moving forward here? Well, I'm here to tell you, if he doesn't get better, they're in for more pain.
It's guaranteed.
Yeah. Like, they, if this is what he is, not only what he is, but what he's trending towards, and it's getting worse, then this is a bad, bad deal for the Predators if that's the case. I'm not convinced that it is, but the numbers are alarming. They're trending that way.
There's no question about it. There's another aspect, potential aspect of a situation like this that hasn't come up, but I think is also worth addressing.
We will get into that coming up next. Your thoughts on UC Soros. How concerned should the Predators be with some of the numbers that we've laid out there? More on that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game, discussing UC Soros and the Predators. And Joe, you had another point on the Soros front you wanted to bring up.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of surprised, actually, that it hasn't come up. And I don't think it's a thing, but I have not seen one person say, oh, yeah, he got paid and he stopped working out.
Yeah.
Stopped working on his game, et cetera, et cetera.
We have heard that with several other players before.
Yeah. For the record, yeah, I don't think that's part of it. Look, I don't know. I don't know what he does on a daily basis.
Technically, he hasn't got paid yet.
Well, yeah, but he's signed it.
He has signed it.
He's signed it. So he is paid. The money hasn't come in, but that's the thing about the NHL.
Fully guaranteed, baby.
Contracts are fully guaranteed. He does not strike me as someone who would get paid and be like,
no,
screw you guys, I'm going home.
No.
So I don't think that's the thing here. You know, but there are also levels of that. Like, there's, you know, it gets exaggerated, like, and I understand, like, you there are examples of people get paid and then they completely fall off the map and stop giving a crap. But a lot of time, maybe there's a little less desperation, you know, like, obviously before you get paid, there's a desperation to get paid, and then you get paid and there's not that. But obviously, I mean, UC Soros is.
See, I actually thought it would go the opposite for him this year. I thought with the contract stuff behind him that he would be like, all right.
Well, remember,
the contract
Forsberg
is behind me, and Askarov's gone. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not behind me anymore with back pressure. I'm good. I can just play.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And sometimes it's also to prove it a little bit when you get paid. I mean, I think Forsberg, right? The year after he got paid was his big year, right?
I believe it's 2 years after he got paid.
That's right. It was the next year.
I think the next year after he got paid was where he got hurt. Halfway through it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. He was having a good year.
Yeah. Good, not great.
But he got hurt in the Philly.
And then last year.
In the Flyers game, right.
Yeah. He got paid, I believe, coming off the 42-goal, 84-point
year. So I guess, so actually, as I totally misremember things, there was some talk during that next year about, Phil got paid.
Right.
And now look at what's happening.
And then last year he put up 94 points.
Yeah. So it's, I don't think that dedication or anything like that, hard work, you know, work ethic. I don't think that's what it
no.
is. It's just about if he is indeed declining, if it's a real thing that's, you know, that it's the trend is going to continue, I have to think it's just – here's an example. If he's already an outlier as a goaltender in this league, the way he plays, his size, all that stuff, and it's probably, you know, next time a guy like this comes around, think carefully before you invest long term because maybe it doesn't last as long.
Well, this is, you know, they need this to be an aberration and not a trend that's indicative of what he's turning into. Like, they need this to be just basically along with everything else this year, a trend where you just stub your toe and then next year he's back to being an elite goalie. Because, again, I'm not even talking about him rebounding from this and being good. Like, they're paying him to be an elite upper echelon goalie. That's right. What you've paid him to be. And that's what you're counting on as you're building your team moving forward. And if you're not going to get that, well, to me, that totally changes the way you have to build your team. Like, if you're not going to get that elite goaltending, then you have to overcome that as best you can. And you probably can't overcome it fully, but you have to overcome that as best you can while building your team in another way. I mean, meanwhile, he's taking up over $7 million a year.
Right. Like, how many – I mean, there are teams in this league that have won it mixing and matching at goaltender, but it's because they don't have all that money devoted to goaltender.
Right.
If you do have that money devoted to goaltender, then yeah, you need Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah.
You need the, you know, Igor. You need those guys. And again, not long ago, I thought Saros deserved to be mentioned with any of those. And I understand people always make the Pekka comparisons, and no, he's not Pekarine and all that stuff. But, I mean, in recent years, I think he's, you know, again, you're talking about a guy who has been in Vezina discussions and for good reason.
Now,
and that's what they paid for.
Now, look, sometimes goalies just have off years. It, like, you're hoping beyond hope that this is what that is if you're a Predators fan. Like, Vasilevsky is a good example. Vasilevsky, we know, I mean, he's been an elite goaltender for a long time in this league. Last year, he wasn't very good. Like, last year, he had a .900 save percentage, and he had a goal save above expected of -5.2. Well, this year, he's at .915, and he's 13.9 on the positive of goal saved above expected. So he has rebounded after what was a bad year, and they're basically the same age. Like, Vasilevsky is 30. Now, Vasilevsky...
That shocks me, too, that he's only 30.
I know. Now, Vasilevsky also is, you know, 6'4" and 230 pounds.
Right.
So it's a different thing. The more concerning part to me, rather than just the raw numbers for this year with Saros, is that it feels like a two-year trend. It feels like it's been trending downward now for two consecutive years. And that's where I start to get pretty worried about, okay, well, if it's been 2 years where he started to trend downward in terms of his overall numbers, like, is that going to turn around? Or is that just the sign of what's now coming?
I mean, last year was – obviously, really bad, really good, just like everything, right?
Yeah.
So he did have, like, an extended stretch of playing UC Saros level.
He did.
But it was very bad before that. And, yeah, so that's two seasons now where it's been more bad than good.
Right. Like, and again, like, the way you've structured your team, he's got to be a huge part of it. Like, I felt like – with year two in the system, because I do think it was pretty easy to explain away, if you wanted to, his bad start last year. It's like, okay, the system was new. They were getting – and that does affect goalies. Like, when you're doing things differently with your breakouts and everything, like, it affects the goalie. So I think clearly he had a tough time adjusting that. The thing is, like, this year, he actually started, like, comparatively speaking, he started pretty well this year, just purely him. Now, they couldn't score a goal around him, and the wins and losses didn't look good, but his numbers to start the year were decent, and they have started to really tail off here lately.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a tough situation. I mean, the Preds paid him based on what you just said about last year. How that's how they looked at it, right? I mean, obviously you had the choice there. You had to figure things out with Askarov. Like, that was a huge question last year, is the direction. But clearly the Preds looked at it like, yeah, you know, it's just a he starts slow, plus all the new system, everything was out of whack. And so you just kind of dismiss that, you know? And now I just don't know, because it's a great point by you. Like, you've removed these distractions and concerns, and it's very clear now what his future is. I mean, even when he started to take over for Pecorino, there was no guarantee, you know, that he was going to be a long-term answer. Yep. Was he a bridge goalie, whatever? Then they, you know, you draft Askarov, and it kind of looks like, yeah, they just kind of look at Saros as the, you know, a really good in-between guy, and now this is going to be their long-term guy, more the traditional big goaltender. Well, that's not the choice they made.
It's not.
Right now, at this moment, looks pretty shaky.
They need him to – they really need him. We talked about, you know, at this point, the playoffs are probably not happening. They need a lot of things to happen to feel decent about next year. Probably at the top of that list is him – looking like UC Saros. That would be great.
Number one. Yep.
That does it for us today here on the program. Chasing Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.